from the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, current events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the program, we take a look at a new legislative report from the Utah Health Department that shows a big increase in the number of Utahns who are using electronic cigarettes, or e-cigarettes. We'll hear today from Adam Bramwell with the Utah Health Department's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program on the new report's implications for public health.
The other point of data that is startling from this is that 15% of current e-cigarette users have never tried a cigarette, which means adults, just like teens, are being lured in by the marketing of these products.
Plus, a summary of your day's top local headlines and more just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. First up, though, this world news from the BBC and Access Downtown. And welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up just ahead on the show, a conversation about an increase in the number of e-cigarette users in the state of Utah. But first up, we have these headlines. A federal judge has denied a request made by Salt Lake City's two daily newspapers to dismiss a lawsuit challenging their joint operating agreement. U.S. District Judge Clark Wadops on Monday afternoon said he would allow the case to go forward. The case, which was filed in June by the group Citizens for Two Voices, aims to undo recent changes to the more than 60-year-old operating agreement between the Deseret News and the Salt Lake Tribune, decrying what the group says are federal antitrust violations. Citizens for Two Voices, which is comprised of a group of newspaper readers and former Tribune reporters, argue that recent revisions to the deal between the two papers threatens the Tribune's independence. Lawyers for the owners of the newspapers had argued that the group had no legal standing to challenge the agreement. They also say there's no merit to allegations that the agreement violates federal antitrust laws. Under the revised agreement, the Deseret News bought the Tribune's share of a printing plant and will get 70% of the profits, up from 42% before. Wadop's decision on Monday will allow the case to move forward. Salt Lake Comic-Con has broken its own attendance record for a third straight time. Event co-founder Brian Brandenburg says the event that celebrates comic and pop culture drew well more than 120,000 people over a three-day run that ended on Saturday. Over 72,000 people turned out for the inaugural Salt Lake Comic-Con last fall, and 100,000 attended its Fan X convention in April. Brandenburg told the Deseret News that organizers cut off online ticket sales at noon on Saturday in an attempt to prevent people from buying passes and not being able to enter. Salt Lake City's fire marshal briefly blocked entry on a few occasions Saturday to slow down the flood of fans entering the Salt Palace Convention Center. Frustrated fans waited for hours to enter on Thursday. At an August 27th meeting of the UTA Board of Trustees, the organizer of a petition, Alex Cragen, asked board members to take a seven-day challenge in which they would rely on public transit as their primary mode of transportation. Almost 2 weeks later, three board members, Representative Greg Hughes, Nessia Christensen, and Keith Bartholomew, have completed the seven-day UTA challenge. But Cragen, who's hoping to convince UTA to extend its hours of service, says having only 3 of 15 board members participate so far isn't good enough.
I gotta say, I'm kind of disappointed in them. You know, you would think that people that were so invested and interested, I mean, the Board of Trustees for Utah's public transportation system, you would think that they'd be interested in using their own system, but apparently not.
Cragen himself has relied on public transit along with walking and biking for about 2 years. Being an avid user of UTA has motivated his interest in improving the transportation provider's service.
It kind of became a passion for me because, I mean, it matters to me. I can't tell you how many times where I've, like, missed the last bus and had to walk the hour and a half it is to my house from Murray Central.
Cragen said he was able to thank Bartholomew and Christensen personally and is hoping to hear from Hughes soon. On his Facebook page, Hughes has chronicled his experience, which included a mile-long walk from the Murray Central Station to his dentist appointment. Cragen says Christensen had to borrow a friend's truck to visit a Home Depot. The National Park Service is considering ways to reduce congestion at the trailhead for one of Utah's most famous natural wonders. Arches National Park near Moab draws more than 1 million people a year, and 2,000 of them visit the trailhead to Delicate Arch each day during the peak season. But Park Service officials say the trailhead parking lot has just 73 spaces, causing many visitors to park illegally along the road leading to it. They say over 100 vehicles are often parked there, and that can damage vegetation and soil and pose safety problems. Salt Lake Tribune reports proposed solutions include expanding the parking lot and eliminating roadside parking. The Park Service is seeking public comment through September 25th on an environmental assessment outlining proposed changes. Finally today, hundreds of bright red salmon will be cruising through the Strawberry Reservoir during their annual run this month. The Utah Division of Wildlife is co-hosting its annual Kokanee Salmon Viewing Day September 20th at the Strawberry Reservoir Visitors Center, about 20 miles outside of Heber City. Visitors are invited to catch a glimpse of the fish in the river or near the reservoir's trapping area. Biologists hope to capture some of the fish at Strawberry Reservoir and Sheep Creek and harvest more than 2 million eggs this year. The eggs will be taken to state hatcheries, and the young salmon will be released into the wild in the spring. Wildlife officials say fish have a much better survival rate when they start out in a hatchery instead of in the wild. And that does it for our summary of the day's top local headlines. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. And thanks again for tuning into The Rundown this afternoon. I'm Roger McDonough. A report released last week by the Utah Department of Health shows a big jump in the number of e-cigarette users in Utah. To hear more about the report and its public health implications, I'm joined on the phone now by Adam Bramwell with the Utah Department of Health's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. Adam, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely, Roger.
So there was a health department legislative report that was released last week, and in it there's some interesting data about tobacco use. But the report also has some information on e-cigarette use in our state. Adam, what is this report and what does it tell us?
Yeah, the most startling findings in regards to e-cigarette use. So in 2012, we had 1.9% of adults using e-cigarettes. But in 2013, we saw that number more than double, up to 4.8%. So in 1 year's time, the number of adults using e-cigarettes jumped by more than 250%.
You know, when it comes to e-cigarettes and their use, there seems to be quite a bit of debate and a lot of information that hasn't sort of been settled yet as to the health implications of these devices, you know, whether or not or how harmful e-cigarettes are. But we've known for a long time now that smoking is a killer. One thing that this report points out is that the growth in the number of e-cigarette users hasn't led to a decline in smokers. Is that correct?
Correct. So in that same time, even though e-cigarette usage has more than doubled, the number of cigarette users has not gone down. Now, one of the main marketing angles that the e-cigarette industry uses, either overtly or kind of subconsciously, is that these things can help you quit. And that might be true for some people, but across the board, population-wise, the majority of people are actually just using both cigarettes and e-cigarettes at that point.
Okay, so they're both. So there are people who are both smoking cigarettes and using e-cigarettes, not necessarily choosing one over the other. Is there any thinking as to why they're using both of these products?
I'm sure it's on a case-by-case basis, but I mean, if I had to speculate, I would say that, you know, a person can smoke cigarettes when they usually would at a bar or, you know, out with friends, but then this e-cigarette is a far more versatile thing. They can use it when they can't get to their cigarette or don't feel like going outside for a puff. So as a result, the person thinks, oh, I'm using this to quit, but really they, in many cases, are putting more nicotine into their body because now they're getting it from two sources and places where they wouldn't normally be getting it.
And so they're maybe using these devices as a bridge between cigarettes, but not to put words in your mouth, but that kind of sounds like what you're describing.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis. The other point of data that is startling from this is that 15% of current e-cigarette users have never tried a cigarette, which means adults, just like teens, are being lured in by the marketing of these products. They're seeing these advertisements for these, you know, tempting flavors that are fun for adults and kids. And they kind of think, oh, well, it's not a cigarette, so it's got to be at least safer and better for you. And then next thing you know, they're in line with the nicotine addiction.
You know, and there's a whole topic there, Adam, that I don't know if you can address, having to do with nicotine, which is definitely, we know, addictive. But I guess, you know, what do we know about how harmful nicotine is compared to all the other stuff that's in cigarettes?
Gotcha. So nicotine in and of itself is not a cancer-causing chemical, but it does do all sorts of weird things to the body. It adversely affects heart and nervous and central nervous system stuff. So when a person smokes, it rapidly elevates heart rate and blood pressure. And then when they're not smoking, it levels back out. So it causes these fluctuations. So a person who smokes does that probably 20 times a day. But a person who uses an e-cigarette puffs on it more than that throughout the day. So it leads to these these kind of, you know, ups and downs, peaks and valleys all day long of nicotine and heart rate and blood pressure and things. So these are the kinds of questions that we're concerned with in public health. Even though we don't know what the long-term effects of these things are, there are reasons to have an eyebrow up towards these devices.
You know, I'm wondering if there is a, I know that regulators have worried that e-cigarettes could, they could get people from the, you know, you might start on e-cigarettes and then turn to smoking. Is there any data in this report or others that you know of that shows people moving from e-cigarettes into smoking?
There isn't hard data on that yet. But what we are seeing amongst youth in the state is that more youth are currently using e-cigarettes illegally than they are using cigarettes illegally. So in time, is this new generation of nicotine consumers going to eventually decide, okay, I'm tired of the kitty stuff, give me a pack of actual cigarettes, or are they going to become lifelong e-cigarette users? We don't know what the data will hold. You can make some kind of logical conclusions, but really the two products are pretty different. I mean, even just as somebody who's a non-smoker, the smell of a cigarette with its harsh, disgusting scent and the scent of an e-cigarette, which sometimes smell almost pleasant, you can just tell that there really are similarities between the two, but they are also kind of worlds apart.
Right, and therefore are probably appealing to different, you know, different people, different demographics, and of course in the end can get them addicted to nicotine. Adam, what about regulation here in the state of Utah or around the country? Are there, you know, this might require a greater understanding of what's been happening at the legislature, but what does regulation of e-cigarettes look like right now in the state of Utah? Are there laws on the books, for example, that say you can't market to X, Y, or Z groups?
That's one of our main concerns at the health department is the lack of regulation around these products. The laws on the books around e-cigarettes there's only two or three of them. And the two pertinent ones are that you have to be 19 to purchase or possess, and then you can't smoke them indoors. They're part of our Indoor Clean Air Act. So those two are well and good, but past that, there's a lot of holes there. One of the main things that we at the Department of Health hope for and are calling to legislators to give us a hand with is the regulation of sale. Because as it currently stands, you don't need a license to sell cigarettes, which means if you owned a donut shop, you could buy a bulk of e-cigarettes, sell them at the register to whoever you felt like, and the worst thing we could do is come in and give you a ticket and tell you to cut it out. We can't remove your license to purchase and sell these things because there is no license to purchase or sell them.
So essentially unregulated for sales, they can just,
yeah.
It's a kind of a wild west of nicotine sales.
It really is. Another area where we see public support would be in tax. The same survey shows that over 70% of Utah adults would support raising the tax on e-cigarettes to the same level of that as cigarettes. Right now, if you buy an e-cigarette, you just pay a sales tax. There's no excise tax. But if you buy back a cigarette, there's a great deal of tax that's levied on that. So we would see support from the public in raising that tax so they would be equal.
What about in terms of marketing? Are there any rules on how marketing of these devices is done, especially as it pertains to youth?
That's another one of the big loopholes that we're facing right now is that because the e-cigarette does not contain the tobacco leaf, there's no actual plant in the product, it's not technically a tobacco product. From our vantage point, it would be, but they're able to skirt the law with that so that you see e-cigarette ads on TV again, on radio, and all over the place at gas stations. So right now, the advertising is another area where they can essentially say and do whatever they want, and it shows in their ads.
You know, the flip side to this is that industry guys, I'm sure, would say, look, this isn't even comparable to cigarettes and is actually far less harmful than cigarettes themselves are, and, you know, why is the government, why are you trying to get in our business?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, and how do you, I guess, how do you weigh that fear of regulation from industry, regardless of what the industry is, but specifically those that relate to health and personal, you know, quote unquote, choice? How do you address that when trying to, I don't know, inform lawmakers on how to act on this, for example?
Right. The regulation that we would ideally wish for at this point in time really is quite elementary. All we're asking for is regulation of sale so we know who is selling these things. And then we can get some manufacturing things in place, too, so we know what's in the product. And then we're also just asking if push comes to shove for some sufficient tax on them. And the main reason we would ask for those two things in particular is because that best practices show that those are the two things that really influence youth behavior. are price and ability to get the product. And if we can prevent youth from getting them, and then we can make them a little bit pricier so they aren't as tempting to kids, then we'll see fewer kids stumbling into this nicotine addiction that lots of teens are nowadays.
Well, and I guess that's the point of any product that is addictive, is that once you get somebody hooked, you have a ready-made long-term customer and big long-term projected profits as well. You know, and I can't think of a lot of other legal products out there that, you know, you might really like flowers, but you're not biologically driven to go out and buy them on a daily basis at the flower shop.
Right, exactly.
It's interesting stuff. Well, I'll just remind our listeners again that we've been speaking with Adam Bramwell of the Utah Department of Health's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program about a new legislative report showing a big increase in the number of e-cigarette users in the state of Utah. Adam, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Absolutely, Roger. It's a pleasure.
You can find this conversation and all of the past interviews we featured on the program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're tuned into The Rundown. Stay with us. And thanks again for tuning in to The Rundown this afternoon. Our show was produced by yours truly, with help from Ryan Cunningham and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow on the show, tune in for a conversation with former Saratoga Springs mayor and Republican candidate for Utah's 4th District seat in Congress, Mia Love. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for the Utah Business Report and Marketplace.